Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest tonight is Jeff Freeman, President and CEO of the American Gaming Association, an organization of casino owners whose purpose is to promote casino interest. We'll be talking to Jeff in a few minutes. This week, the Atlantic Club closed in Atlantic City. What was unusual about this is that two other casinos in that market basically bought the assets of the casino in order to shut it down. The feeling in that market is that they have too many casinos to survive, and some Darwinian survival of the fittest is required. The fittest ones in Atlantic City are basically eating the weakest ones. One of the weakest casinos in that market is the Revel. It got out of bankruptcy not too long ago, and then a new management team designed a loss rebate program that simultaneously ticked off many players and drove the company close to bankruptcy again. Now a third management team is trying its best. There are several Atlantic City properties that are rather old and shabby. I would think it would be smarter to close the older and shabbier ones than the newest and the prettiest, but who knows how it'll turn out. Richard, what do you make of all this?
Yeah, I think it's just natural, you know, with more casinos opening in Pennsylvania and, you know, around them, it's just going to take business the same way, Reno is suffering since they started opening casinos in Northern California. Just the way of the world. Who knows, you know, if 20 years from now there'll be casinos at all in Atlantic City anymore.
Interesting. All right. A week ago, Richard was mentioning some techniques for getting non-expert players off of certain table games so he and his teammates can use all the spots to both increase the speed of the play and, if necessary, have small bettors take a few extra or fewer cards than usual in order to steer the desired cards to a big player. We received an email from a player in Oregon sent to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com that says Richard should grow a thicker skin. The emailer said that we need the civilians on the tables in order to lose enough money so the smarter players can win without bankrupting the casino. Dealing with these civilians is simply a cost of doing business, especially if you're on a low-limit table. Do you have a response to this, Munchkin?
Well, yeah, I mean, actually, the topic came up, I said exactly that the person who had emailed initially needed a thicker skin because he was getting flack from players when he was wonging into their tables. And I agree, we need the ploppy gamblers. I mean, if the casinos are not making money, we can't make money. And the more money the casino makes, the better it is for us because the more they can not notice when we take it out. But professionals often need to take over the entire table for various reasons. And so while I welcome the ploppy players, the civilians, I want them in the casino. I want the casino to be doing well. I just don't want them at my table, because often they can literally be taking money out of my pocket. Not just because of game speed, but, you know, one of the worst instances is when they point out to the dealer that the dealer is making a mistake. And, you know, the dealer may literally be paying me, you know, $1,000 or more in error. I don't need some $5 player pointing out to the dealer that they're making an error there. So, Yeah. So, you know, as I say, I'm happy to have the civilians in the casino. Just I would prefer to get them off of my table.
Interesting. All right. Let me introduce our guest. Jeff Freeman is president and CEO of the American Gaming Association, AGA. In his role as chief executive of the AGA, Freeman is a leading advocate for the commercial gaming industry and is responsible for positioning the association to address regulatory, political, and educational challenges and opportunities. Jeff Freeman, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Bob, Richard, thank you for having me. You forgot to mention that I'm also a civilian floppy player.
Uh-huh. Well, stay off of Richard's table.
We love you for it.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I missed that. Okay, good. Now, what is the AGA, and why is that important to players?
So the AGA represents most aspects of the commercial casino business. We represent the primary casino operators, everyone from Las Vegas Sands, Wynn, MGM, Caesars, regional operators, Pinnacle, Isle of Capri, Boyd Gaming Station, and others, as well as the manufacturers that supply the business, IGT, Bally, Scientific Games, Aristocrat. They're all members of the AGA. What they all believe in is the need to protect this industry, to make sure the industry can continue to thrive and expand. And that's where we're focused. The organization was created in the mid-90s under the leadership of Frank Fahrenkopf, who protected the industry, and now we're writing the next chapter.
All right. We spoke earlier on the casino closure in Atlantic City. Do you have any comment on that?
My only comment on that would be, I think, twofold. One, we're a young business. This industry in its current form is really about 20 years old. So there's a lot to still be ironed out. There's a lot of evolution to take place when it comes to our business, where it can thrive, where it can't thrive. That'd be one part. The other part of it, though, is that as you used the word before, Darwinian, I think there's an element of that that's true. This is a natural process. You know, Starbucks is a very successful business, yet there are Starbucks that open and Starbucks that close every day of the week. We should expect, and the same is true in the hotel business, in the restaurant business, in every other successful industry in this country, we should expect that we're going to have some areas that are immense successes. We're going to have other areas that go through a natural process like this, and that's part of a maturing business.
Very good.
So do you lobby both at a federal level and in individual states?
Yeah, Richard, that's a great question. Traditionally, the AGA has been focused entirely on what takes place in Washington. Now, obviously, to affect outcomes in Washington, you have to be engaged at the state level. As these members of Congress go home, you have to make sure they're hearing the right message. I think where the AGA will transition in the years ahead is focused not just on Washington, but focusing a bit more in the states. And the example I'll use for you there is these areas where expansion's taking place, whether it's Massachusetts, perhaps Florida, other states that may consider expansion in the future, such as Texas. All too often, what we find in these states where gaming doesn't exist is a lot of the same old critics of gaming come out with antiquated and often false arguments about what this industry is and spread those without any counter force pushing back. I expect to see the AGA being much more aggressive in those states, making sure that people are aware of what this industry truly does. It's up to the states whether they wish to expand. AGA is going to make sure they have all the facts.
So was the AGA involved in New Jersey getting internet gambling? And what is the AGA position on internet gambling in general?
Sure. Was AGA involved in New Jersey? I think what AGA was involved in, to be purely totally transparent here, the AGA was involved as far as making sure that it was aware within the regulatory bodies through a suit that was filed that PokerStars should not be allowed into the New Jersey market. And I'm sure some of your listeners would disapprove of that approach, but I'm happy to talk about why it's in all of our interests to have reputable companies that are complying with the regulatory process. So that was the extent of our involvement in New Jersey. With regard to our position on Internet gaming, the AGA is a proponent of Internet gaming. Traditionally, our focus has been on a federal so-called poker-only approach. We have not seen the federal government move on this issue. We have seen three states, Nevada, New Jersey, and Delaware, move forward. We expect to see other states move forward. And at this point in time, I think the most important aspect of our position on Internet gaming is that we strongly endorse the need for regulation in this area. There are some who would rather see prohibition in this area. We oppose that point of view and will encourage regulation.
Sheldon Adelson, one of the richest men in the world. He owns two major casinos in Las Vegas, along with some very profitable ones in Asia. He's presumably a member of the AGA, yet his position on online gambling is in many ways opposite to yours. He has demonstrated a willingness to put his money where his mouth is, big time, and conceivably could spend by himself quite a bit more to oppose online gaming than the AGA has budgeted to support online gaming. Is this awkward for you?
There's a lot of things awkward in this business, Bob, and it's all part of getting used to. You know, we're not the first industry to have people that disagree on various policies. My job at the American Gaming Association is to take the temperature of the industry, do all the due diligence that I need to do, and make a decision based on the research I've done, the discussions I've had, as to what is in the industry's best interest. That's one of the interesting things about an association. While others are looking out for what may be in the best interest of their particular company, my job, my unique job, is to look out for what's in the best interest of the industry. The fact is that the Internet is here. The Internet is not going away, and people are going to find a way to play online. In 2012, before Nevada, New Jersey, or Delaware were up and running, Americans spent nearly $3 billion playing online games. We've got a choice to make, and the choice is not can we get rid of this, because that's not even an option. Our choice is can we regulate this and make sure that those who might wish to do us harm or take advantage of it are kept out of the market, or do we want to let the black market continue to thrive and in so doing allow criminals to take advantage of the system here in the United States? That's the choice that we have to confront, and AGA strongly supports regulation.
And how is the temperature in Washington? I mean, I mean, it seems obviously like Congress can't agree on anything, but I mean, do you see hope for a national, a federal law that would govern all of the states?
Well, Richard, you hit the nail on the head. This is not an environment right now where much of anything is happening. So the most likely outcome, not just for gaming, but for any industry pushing any agenda, is that you're not going to see significant action here in Washington. That said, the efforts of those who support prohibition, I expect to be, as Bob was mentioning a few minutes ago, I expect those to be extremely well-funded, and I view it as a very serious threat to the spread of online gaming. Those critics are able to use arguments that tend to pull at the heartstrings and resonate with people, and we should all take this very seriously. I think protecting the ability to regulate online gaming is going to be a very serious fight, one we should all take seriously, and one where the AGA and our members will invest to make sure that this business and the needs and interests of the players are taken seriously.
Do you think that it'll continue with this state by state kind of piecemeal thing? Because I just, as you say, it's hard to get anything done federally. So, I mean, do you see a time when something will happen here, that, or do you think it'll just continue to roll out state by state?
The Internet is borderless. Sooner or later, the federal government will step in one way or another, to put in place, at the very least, minimum standards. The idea with a borderless Internet that we would have wholly different approaches in New Jersey than we would in New York, in Nevada than we would in California, makes little sense in this environment. And I'm not aware of any other industry operating on the Internet where you would have such vastly different approaches. We believe there is an opportunity here for the federal government to put in place minimum protections when it comes to how information is collected, keeping minors out of these games, tracking money laundering, providing law enforcement with the tools they need to keep bad actors out of the marketplace. There is absolutely a role for the federal government here. I expect the federal government to come to that conclusion at some point in time. In the near term, by all accounts, and simply by understanding the Washington environment, the most likely outcome is that the states continue to inch forward. But that doesn't mean that we won't have quite a battle in Washington as those who support prohibition spend significant dollars to put this issue on the radar screen.
Now, we're not going to be so rude as to ask exactly how much it costs to bribe a congressman these days. But is it fair to assume that lobbying involves informing, entertaining, and occasionally enriching decision makers?
The environment we're in today, Bob, is just you know, actually, to your comment. Your comment is reminds me of the comments that people might make about the casino business circa 1960. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of misimpressions as to what this industry is, association with organized crime and other things of that ilk. The same is true of Washington. Washington is a much different environment today than it was 10 years ago and certainly was 20 and 30 years ago. It's a very transparent place today. When you look at what happens with everything, with access to information through social media and other channels, this is a very transparent environment. In fact, I've spent a lot of time in state capitals, from Madison, Wisconsin, to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Tallahassee, Florida, and elsewhere. And what happens at the state level is far more convoluted than what happens in Washington. This is an environment right now where the emphasis really is on informing, making people aware of your point of view, making them aware of who your allies are, making them aware of the consequences of their decisions, and letting them do what they're going to do. The AGA will be heavily invested in making sure that our point of view is readily available to these members, and we're confident that when people actually have the information they need, they'll make the right decision.
Well, also, it seems to me the major factor is how much money is going to go into the state of that particular congressman. I mean, that seems to be the thing that moves them more than the rest.
That's part of the Richard. That's part of the information that needs to be provided. When you look at the opportunity with online gaming, whether it's in New Jersey, Delaware, Nevada, or it's in states that might be considering it, like California, Pennsylvania, New York, and elsewhere, they're going to look at the opportunities associated with this. It's naive to think that the internet is not a logical channel for business to grow into. These states certainly think that. They see the opportunity they have with gaming. They see the opportunity they have with their own lotteries that might wish to game online or provide their lottery ticket sales online. So there's a built-in constituency to want to protect the ability to expand into this online marketplace, and I think that's something we have going in our favor.
What about Texas? I mean, not just online. I mean, it seems crazy to me that Texas is a state that doesn't have casinos.
Well, there are. You know, Texas is one of several states that would probably fall into that category, and as I talk to some of the folks in our industry, particularly on the manufacturing side, they make me aware of the literally tens of thousands of illegal machines that are operating in Texas at truck stops and other venues. So to say the gaming isn't there would certainly be a falsehood. Gaming is there. It's just not in the form that any of us would like to see it. We'll see what happens. I'm told, and you know, I'm newer to this industry, I'm told that Texas is one of those environments, the politics are such that casino-style gaming is not a likelihood in the near future. But the more we can do to mainstream this business, the more we can do to share the facts about what this business does, not just in Las Vegas, but in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and Kansas City, Missouri, and Tunica, Mississippi, the greater the likelihood we'll see expansion. One of the great ironies I've noticed in my limited time in this industry is that those who have the greatest skepticism about gaming are often those who are farthest removed from the product. The communities in which we operate become passionate proponents of the business. It's when you go to those where we're not that you hear all these antiquated claims about what the industry might do.
we're talking about online gaming, players who are interested in that, other than writing their congressman, is there anything they can do to help get online gambling in their own state?
Well, I think there's a lot, and I appreciate that question, Bob. I think there's a lot folks can do. In addition to writing their member of Congress, there's a great grassroots organization, the Poker Players Alliance. I would encourage people to get affiliated with that organization and activate when the PPA reaches out. We live in an environment where social media is rampant and people can share their opinions. There's no shortage of articles about this topic, whether it be in the Las Vegas Review-Journal or papers around the country. Getting on there, providing comments, sending letters to the editor, all of those are ways to engage. At a local level, making sure the governor understands the value of this, making sure the others in the sphere of politics locally understand the desire to game. All of that's important. I think recruiting friends to support this cause with the PPA and through other means, all of these things are important. The other side has money. We have the masses who I think support the need here to both enjoy the product as well as sensibly regulate, and we need to make sure we take advantage of that.
What about, I live in California where it seems that basically everybody wants the gambling. It's just the arguing seems to be about who's going to get to run it. I mean, what do you see coming for California?
Well, I look forward to learning more about the California environment. I'm heading out there to Sacramento in February to join a conference on this very topic. The language I've heard to date is one where I know many of the tribes are interested in exploring online gaming. It seems to be an environment where if there's online gaming, it's likely to be poker only. That's the little bit that I know. Richard, you're on the ground. You probably know even a little bit more than that. But I know bills have been introduced in Sacramento. There's a strong desire to expand. May or may not happen this session. But there seems to be a growing comfort level with poker.
You mentioned the Poker Players Alliance. A couple months ago, we had on Rich Muni, who is one of their executives. Now, as you say, this group lobbies for better poker conditions across the country. Are there a lot of issues where the AGA and the PPA find themselves on the same side?
I would like to think, Bob, that there's a lot of issues where we and the playing community can be on the same side. In many instances, what's good for the players is good for the operators and the manufacturers, and vice versa. One of the things I'd like to do with the AGA is position our organization as a greater champion of the playing community. I think that our interests can align, they do align, and I'd like to see us engage there. We certainly see that with PPA, and I think there'll be other opportunities to build that out. Our companies, strongly regulated, reputable companies, want to take care of their customer, and I think when it comes to public policy issues, our interests are often going to be aligned.
It appears that the AGA is funded by casinos and manufacturers primarily, or maybe entirely. But as you say, players are a key part of the casino dynamic. We'd like to know, is there any mechanism for players to suggest, complain, compliment, etc., about what the AGA is doing and what we would like to see them do in the future?
That's a great question, and the honest answer right now is that there isn't a channel for that to happen. I'm happy to give my email address out. It's not that complicated, gfreeman@americangaming.org. I'm open to that, and I think we probably, as we reinvent our organization, we probably need to create that easy channel for the playing community to let us know what they're thinking, let us know where the obstacles are to enjoying the product, particularly where the government-placed obstacles are. I think that we have work to do in two areas. One, learning more from our customer, learning more as to how we can help them remove barriers. I will say some of these are competitive issues. With all due respect to the playing community, I'm not interested in hearing the problem they had at one casino that they don't have at another casino. I would encourage you to simply go to the other casino. That's the free market. But I am interested in hearing about those things that are burdens to the process, that make it difficult to enjoy the business, particularly things that are put in place by the government. The other thing we have to do, I think, is educate the playing public and do a better job educating the playing public on where some of the things that the government's doing become a burden. You know, I look at the regulatory process. I look at what the consumer is interested in. The consumer wants to see the gaming business be innovative, be cutting edge, using high technology, providing access to new types of and ways of playing the games. Unfortunately, the regulatory process is such where it's very difficult for our companies to evolve, to make changes. You know, just to move a machine on the floor requires filing enormous paperwork with regulators in many areas. Players would never, for good reason, they would never understand that the business has to go through that process. I think we can enlist the player as an advocate in changing some of those processes, and I think we can also learn from the player things we need to do better on their behalf.
Does the AGA have a position on legalizing sports betting?
A question I'm often asked, and what I can say is, since I've come over to the AGA, the issue of sports betting has not been a high priority. It's not been a high priority with the operators. It's not been a high priority with the manufacturers. It is not an issue that has been raised frequently. At the same time, what I will say is, I don't think it does any of us any good. I don't think it does the gaming industry a whole lot of good to have a product, in the case of sports betting, that is technically only legal in a couple locations, yet with a wink and a nod, we all know that everyone's enjoying it. The problem with that approach is it makes people feel some sense of guilt that they're doing something wrong. I don't think we get very far as a country having laws that everyone openly ignores. And I don't think that does our industry any good. So I think in time the issue will be addressed, but it's not a high priority at this point in time.
You are the, as far as I know, the second president of the AGA. Frank Fahrenkopf was he started it until fairly recently. Frank was a political animal. He had been national chairman of the Republican Party, I believe. Whereas your background is not quite so political. How is your approach different than Mr. Fahrenkopf's?
Frank was an extraordinary advocate for the gaming industry, a guy who grew up in Nevada, had the industry in his blood, and he was the right leader for the right time as the industry was beginning to expand. Someone who, frankly, could make many conservatives feel comfortable with what the industry was and how it did its business. Frank was leading the organization for about 17 years, and I know the industry is grateful to him for all that he made possible. We're at the point now where it's AGA 2.0. It's the next generation of the organization. Washington has changed. The industry has changed. And I'm a very different style person, as you mentioned, Bob, than what we might have had in the past. My approach is very much one of building coalitions, of selling the value of an industry, being very proactive. As I say, Washington's changed. The way things used to be done in the dark of night in smoke-filled rooms, that's not how things get done today. Things are won today in the court of public opinion. Things are done with a very, very strategic and savvy public affairs style operation. That's my background. I have had some success in other industries utilizing that approach, and that's what we'll do here in the gaming industry. I think the thing that we need to do most in the gaming industry is become unapologetic champions of what we do. We've been fighting a lobbying war in the back rooms while the other side has been fighting a PR war against what we do. We need to supplement our great lobbying with the best PR machine that this industry has seen to tell the story of the value that we bring to communities and eliminate some of these antiquated perceptions about the industry.
For many years, the face of the anti-gambling was John Kyle of Arizona. In fact, he was the one who introduced the Kyle bill. And I'm wondering, he eventually, I don't know, had a change of heart. But I'm wondering, is there someone now who is the main opponent, the guy that, you know, if people wanted to work on a campaign to get somebody out of office, is there a main opponent for this, for the gambling?
Richard, that's a loaded question. There certainly are. There are certainly a handful of people that are anti-gaming. I want to be careful on the radio as to calling those people out. I think people who do their research can find those.
Well, let me make it a little easier then. John Kyle put his name on the bill. Is there somebody now who has a bill that with their name on it that's anti-gaming?
Yeah, there isn't right now. There isn't anyone who's been willing to step forward. There are certainly, I'm hearing rumblings of people who may step forward with a bill to prohibit online gaming. And if and when that happens, we'll make sure that everybody knows about that. We'll work with the Poker Players Alliance and others to make sure that person is leading it. What I think you do have is you have a handful of individuals, particularly on the right, who largely from a social perspective don't like gambling. They're
the small government people.
Yeah, well, the irony is they've become big government people. They want to use, and that's you know, it goes back to kind of political science. What makes it interesting is you've got the folks on the far right and the far left. They actually meet one another. They just want to use government for different purposes. There are a lot of those folks who feel that the government should play a greater role in preventing you and I from gambling. And I think that's something all of us should be concerned about. That said, I think the industry can sometimes be more defensive than is warranted. You know, you look at how quickly issues change in this country. In 2004, the issue of gay marriage was being used to win a presidential election. You look at Ohio and other states where it was a big issue. You look at where we are 10 years later, and I might say that that issue is all but decided. People don't even really talk about it as much anymore. Whatever your politics might be, the environment has shifted. You look at what's going on in Colorado and other states with regard to the use of marijuana. Opinions are shifting dramatically with a lot of these issues. The critics of gaming are dwindling, which should make our efforts a little bit easier. We just haven't created the counterpunch. We've allowed a shrinking pool of people to become a dominant voice, and it's time that we need to extinguish that fire.
Kentucky is one of the states that currently doesn't have casino gambling, and it's going to require a constitutional amendment in order to have it. In one of their leading newspapers about a month ago, a magistrate named Richard Nelson argued that the social costs of casino gambling outweigh the benefits. He pointed to the blight area around Atlantic City casinos, higher crime rates, social costs of pathological gamblers. These are arguments we've heard for years. The quotation he uses in the article generally come from anti-gambling advocates. Now, how do you respond? Now, he's talking to people in the Bible Belt. How do you respond to his arguments in a way that would be convincing to someone in the Bible Belt?
Yeah, Bob, I think you just asked me how I tell the state with the largest horse racing industry in this country that gambling isn't a bad thing. I mean, come on. The hypocrisy is off the charts. First of all, I want to thank Churchill Downs, a new member of the American Gaming Association. I'm grateful for their support. They're, as you may know, expanding beyond the parimutuel industry and getting into the casino industry, and certainly a proponent of expanded gaming in Kentucky and elsewhere. And they're great members, so I'm grateful for that. You know, time and again, and it's not just this gentleman in Kentucky. It's the effort against casinos in Florida right now. They all want to point to Atlantic City, and they want to tell a story in the way that they want to tell it about how Atlantic City is somehow going to be what happens elsewhere. And it's a convenient story to tell. It's a convenient story to tell for two reasons. One, They always forget to tell the story of what Atlantic City was like before gaming came in, number one. Number two, they avoid telling the story of what's happening, as I said before, in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, where Bethlehem Steel and a lot of other manufacturing left town. Las Vegas Sands came in and rebuilt the community, and rebuilt the community where small businesses are now grateful for what they're doing, where when they went up for a recent hearing as for relicensing, not a single critic showed up because of the gratitude people feel to this new business that's helping redevelop the community. That story can be told in French Lick, Indiana. That story can be told in countless communities around the country. So it's convenient to point to Atlantic City. I do think as an industry, we need understanding that that's where the critics go. We have to adopt the Atlantic City issue as our problem that needs to be addressed. And there's a way to address that issue. You were talking at the outset about the Atlantic Club and Rebel and what's going on there. The industry needs to see a turn in Atlantic City, or at least take the issue head on to disarm the critics. So I think we've got some work to do on that front, but I think it's a convenient approach by the critics that we'll be able to refute.
Very good. We received an email regarding taxes, and we didn't let you know this question was coming, so surprise. The W-2Gs, which are tax forms you get proving you want a jackpot of at least $1,200. The $1,200 limit was proposed many, many years ago, and when $1,200 were pretty, jackpots were pretty rare, and now they're pretty common. Now, players hate all this. Is there any chance the AGA, you know, casinos aren't really crazy about all this paperwork and tax work either. Is there any chance the AGA would be interested in working with players to get that number increased to some larger number?
On this issue, there are varying approaches on a state-by-state basis. I believe Massachusetts right now, as they get up and running, is actually looking at a $600 disclosure. So if you think the $1,200 is bad, just imagine cutting that in half in Massachusetts and perhaps elsewhere. I think where the AGA can play an active role here is helping states understand what is good policy, what's being done elsewhere, what tends to work the best, what yields the best results in terms of player participation. You can put any policy in place that you may want. That policy is going to have an effect on how players behave. And I think where we can play a role is on the educational side in making policymakers aware of every action has a reaction, of the reaction to these various levels of tax filings. So more to learn on that issue. It's certainly one that has been on our radar screen because of those states that want to go even well below the $1,200. I think our focus will be on education, making policymakers aware of best practices and what will yield the best results for them. Irritating, frustrating the player is not going to be in the long-term best interest of the state.
Or the casinos.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So recently in the news, it was reported there was a big shakeup in the AGA management. What was that about, and how does that affect the future of the AGA?
Yeah, two things on that, Richard. One, I think when you bring in new leadership, you have a natural change. The AGA has been around, as I said, for 17 years. Several of the people at the AGA had actually been around for all 17 years. So you have some natural change, number one. Number two, just to use a sports analogy here, we're switching from an Ohio State offense to an Oregon-style offense. We're switching, if that makes sense. Some great players in Ohio State, many that are going on to the NFL. Some great players at Oregon, many of which are going on to the NFL. But you need a different body type. You need a different skill set. And that's the shift we're making. My emphasis has been on people who can bring into the AGA three things. One, people who can bring in industry experience. It's critical that as we represent the industry, we know the business. Two, people who can bring in political acumen. They really understand how these issues move, whether it be at a state level or at a federal level. And three, people that have association experience. Associations are unique animals, and nobody goes to school to be an association executive. But understanding what an industry needs, how to communicate with an industry, how to coalesce an industry, those are very important skill sets that I'm looking for, and that's the natural transition that we're making. I'm very excited about the team that we're building, about the way that we are going to proactively promote the interests of the gaming industry. We're going to be a bigger organization. We're going to be an ever stronger organization. And we've had a first wave of new hires, more to come. Couldn't be more excited about it.
Will this change affect players?
Well, I think it will in the sense, Bob, that we are going to look for opportunities to work with the playing community. As much as I'm praising the Poker Players Alliance, and I encourage your listeners to participate in the Poker Players Alliance, I'll be very candid with you that in the long run, I don't want to have to outsource my grassroots to another organization. I want to find a way where we can all work together. I want to find a way where players feel that there's a place for them within the AGA. We're communicating with them. We're letting them know issues that we're confronting. We're letting the playing community know where they could be helpful. We're letting the playing community know that we want their feedback. Right now, I don't have a direct channel to the playing community other than that email address I gave out earlier tonight. We need to create that. So, you know, the type of operation we're building at the AGA is one where we're going to put in place mechanisms to speak and communicate directly with the player. And I think that's an important part of our evolution as an organization.
Now, your email address, gfreeman@americangamingassociation.com.
Or just American, let me correct it for you.
Good.
gfreeman@americangaming.org.
.org.
Yep.
All right. So G Freeman, people, to me, that's a weird way to spell Jeff, but that's neither here nor there. I apologize for saying that.
I'll put you in touch with my mother.
Oh, good. I'm sure I'm going to win that one. What kind of things would you like to hear from players that would be useful to you? I mean, compliments are nice, but that's, you really need information or opinions. What type of information would be really useful to you?
Well, the first thing I've learned in this industry, Bob, is I shouldn't expect many compliments, so I won't be holding my breath for those.
I think you speak very well, so you can let your breath out.
I appreciate that. I think what's most important is hearing about the challenges, about the obstacles, about where the playing public sees things that, if addressed, could increase their likelihood of enjoying the product. As I said a few minutes ago, we need to understand the business. And I want to understand the business from the operator's perspective. I want to understand the business from the manufacturer's perspective. And I certainly want to understand the business from the playing community's perspective.
Well, here's actually a really important issue for the players. Right now, if you're a player and you travel across the United States with a large amount of cash, you're in danger of it being confiscated by the police because they think you're a drug dealer. You know, people have money confiscated in airports, in these, you know, traffic stops, driving from one casino to another, and the police find money in the car and they confiscate it. So it'd be great, you know, if we could let the legislators know that it shouldn't be illegal to have cash.
Yeah, it certainly isn't illegal to have cash. But you're right.
There isn't a law, but it's getting confiscated because they say anybody with a large amount of cash must be a drug dealer.
And what do they define as a large amount of cash based on what you've heard from various folks?
Well, it's
in excess of $10,000.
It's as little as a few thousand dollars in states like Louisiana. But, you know, it's often $10,000, $20,000,
$30,000.
I mean, we've had a couple of attorneys on the show who have, you know, a dozen or more of these cases where people are just having their money confiscated by police.
That's a good issue to raise. I'd like to learn more about that. I'll look into that. You mentioned Louisiana and some other states. I'll reach out to some of my guys and try to learn more about that. Those are the type of things we need to understand. If there are obstacles to the players, if there are things that are getting in the way of them enjoying the product, there's no reason the industry can't be their champion in removing those issues. We need to address those issues. You know, there's a sense, and it's a big issue that I've got to address, there's a sense that the industry is making a significant portion of its money from those who don't have money. I've never understood that logic. The industry preying on the poor, and that's where we're making a significant portion of our money. It simply makes no sense. The industry is making its money from people that have money to spend, and understanding the issues that those people are running into is in our best interest. And I think individual companies understand those on an individual basis, but on an industry-wide basis, I don't think we've got our finger on that pulse, and we need to learn that. Another similar example is, you know, you look at what's happening in Las Vegas in particular, where you're seeing the big shift in revenue generation from gaming to non-gaming. What Steve Wynn and Jim Murren and others have done so successfully in the club business and the money that's being raised there. What does that next generation person want? Are they going to someday switch from the club to the slot machine? Is there a different style game that would attract them? We need to learn that in order to allow our and empower our business to adapt. That's another big area of investigation, and I think the AGA will become a leader in that area as well.
Jeff Friedman, thank you very much. This was informative to Richard and me for sure, and hopefully our audience. We wish you very continued success in your leadership with the American Gaming Association. Thank you.
I appreciate the opportunity. Great to be here, and please let me know if there's anything I can do in the future.
We may send an email to clarify points or something.
Please do so.
Thank you. So, Richard, what did we learn tonight? I thought he was well-spoken, a good advocate for the casino
industry.
Yeah,
but very much a politician, I would say, you know, very cautious in his answers.
Which is probably appropriate, given the world he lives in, where the one reason Congress doesn't get much done is everybody's so antagonistic to everybody else. So that's the world he deals with. So that's what he's doing. All right. Yeah. The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. That's more than anyone else has. Every Thursday is Senior Slot Tournament Day, where $5,200 is given away each week. All seniors get one free entry, and up to two more may be earned with a modest amount of play. They're going to be having double point days, Martin Luther King Day, this coming Monday, January 20th, midnight to midnight. No limits on points or machines. The next semester of free video poker classes at the South Point will begin Wednesday, February 5th, and will continue weekly for 10 weeks. The current schedule will be or may be found on bobdancer.com. At the Palms, they have completely reformatted the weekend drawings. In January, it'll be Friday only at 7:30 p.m., and you can now earn a maximum of 100 drawing tickets each day. This turns the drawings into more of a low roller event where the people who show up every day have the biggest advantage. On Fridays and Saturday evenings, you receive 5x drawing tickets. Also, you're a guaranteed winner. If you swipe on Friday and do not win, you'll have $10 of free play on your card Saturday between 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. Come in and download it or lose it. Play, Earn, and Win Monday, Wednesday, Friday through tomorrow has a theme of warm and toasty, which is primarily Lowe's gift cards. There is more than $350 of Lowe's gift cards available at a rate of 0.25%. Starting Monday, you can earn up to $200 a day in free slot play. As always, you keep your points even if you redeem for the gift cards or free play. Every Thursday is a senior drawing at 4 p.m. based on your play on Thursday. Five prizes totaling $900 are given away. There's a limit of 100 tickets per person. VideoPoker.com remains the best place to practice a very wide variety of games, including Quick Quads, Ultimate X, Extra Draw Frenzy Poker, Hyper Bonus, many others. Often, these games are the best returning games in a casino, and you need to practice to make sure you know how to play. Today's free daily contest is Triple Play Poker. Tomorrow is 100 Play Draw Poker with Quick Quads. Saturday is Extra Draw Frenzy Poker. And Sunday is Big Times Draw Poker. We haven't talked about Big Times Draw Poker recently, so I'm going to explain the rudiments. It's a 10 coin per line game where you are paid 5 coins per line times the multiplier, if any. The multiplier is based on the highest card in the original dealt hand. If there's a king or a queen in the hand, your multiplier is 1, basically meaning no multiplier at all. If your highest card is a jack, you get a 2 times multiplier. And the lower the high card is, it goes up. You can get 3 times, 5 times, 6 times, 9 times, or even 10 times multiplier. Now, for this highest multiplier of 10x, that's awarded if your highest card is a deuce, meaning aces dealt with a deuce, dealt deuces with an ace, or some sort of aces and deuces full house. In a lot of different games, those are very high paying hands anyway, and with a 10 times multiplier, it gets to be very large. These are games where you don't need to learn a new strategy, and playing the game increases the EV, also increases the variance. For the last 7 days of the month, there'll be monthly contests offering larger prizes. They haven't yet announced what that will be. All right, we have about a minute and a half to go. Right now, Richard and I have not nailed down our guest for next week for sure. We will be here. We will have somebody interesting, I promise. In 2 weeks, we're going to have Michael Shackelford talking about proposition bets for the Super Bowl. Super Bowl proposition bets. Like, I personally lost my tush on betting on no safety. The no safety is generally a very good bet. However, several Super Bowls recently, there has been a safety. And this is a game that, this is something that you have to bet a lot to win a little. And if it actually, last year I lost $10,000 on safety. Was not a happy camper on that one. So
have the odds been posted yet?
No, they don't even know the teams yet for the Super Bowl. So this particular Sunday, the 4 teams will get down to 2, and then it's going to take, then they have 2 weeks off, and then they will come and play for the Super Bowl. So usually the proposition bets are posted the Thursday that Mike on the
10 days ahead.
Yeah, 10 days ahead. So that's usually when they come out. All right. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good night.
Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.